Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin'.
Welcome, everybody. It is October 22nd, and we are broadcasting live from the MBA conference here in Chicago, Illinois. It is pouring down rain out there right at the moment. Quite a contrast to the gorgeous weather we had last year, but we're already in the midst of all of the meetings. We all went to our respective places so that we could join you live from the broadcast. Very excited to have you here, and this is a special edition coming to you from the Mortgage Banking Conference here in Chicago. Got a lot of reports to give you. We're really excited about the guest we have. The recent mortgage banking article that came out was written about the mortgage brokerage community. It says down but not out. It's written by Robert England, who writes frequently he's a senior writer for the Mortgage Banking Magazine. We're thrilled to have him on in the broadcast. Encourage you to tune in. Tell your friends about it. If you're an originator, especially if you've worked for a broker, been involved in the brokerage side of the business, we got some encouraging reports for you. You're going to want to stay tuned all the way through the broadcast until we get to Robert here in the Hot Topics segment. What's so encouraging about being here in Chicago is the number of people that have walked up to me. We were at the First American party, and I was wanting to go back to my room, but I got convinced, oh, come on, let's show up and go to the First American party. I'm so glad I did. I cannot tell you the number of people that walked up to me and say, we listen to your broadcast every week, and thank you so much for what we're doing. So thank you to you that listen to us faithfully and tell others about the broadcast. It's a real honor and privilege to have the place that we have now in the marketplace, in the mortgage industry, talking about the things of the industry, what's going on. And we start out the top of the program each and every week getting probably one of the most important aspects of what's going on, the news of what's happening in interest rates. Joe Farr, good to have you with us again.
Morning, Dave.
How are things back home, back down there in Texas?
Hey, it's beautiful here. October in Texas is great.
Well, it's prettiest. You can't get Texas at its best when it's early in spring, those wonderful temperatures, and then in the fall. And so, anyway, give it. What's going on in the markets today, Joe?
Well, we're down just a little bit, David. We started the morning down about 6 or 7 30-seconds, and we've recovered back to where we're down 2. No news really to speak of. I guess we're just giving back a little bit of Friday's nice gains. This morning we did get an announcement out of Germany that they're warning of a slowdown, and also have heard from Japan they're warning of slower growth, and China we know is slowing down just a bit, and all these are sort of built upon each other because there's nobody to buy the exports of all these companies. So our countries, I'm sorry. So, it's just a little bit of slow growth, and that didn't have a big impact on the market. We would have seen MBS prices improve ordinarily on that kind of information, and the stock market's down just a little bit. So it wasn't big news.
Well, it's interesting to see how what affects the news and what it doesn't. Let's get in talking about what happened last week. Give us an overview of last week. We were also busy getting up here to Chicago. We did get a chance to spend a lot of time, so I'm as interested as anybody what happened.
Yeah, despite a real nice rally on Friday, you might have been traveling on Friday. MBS prices improved about 10 or 11, 30 seconds on Friday. It wasn't a great week last week. Rates rose about 10 basis points on the week, and MBS prices fell overall about 20, 30 seconds on the week. And this time it wasn't Europe. It wasn't the Fed. It was just good old, better than expected U.S. economic data. Starting with retail sales on Monday and then industrial production on Tuesday and housing starts on Wednesday and Philly Fed on Thursday, all of those beat expectations pretty handily and were better than the prior month. And on top of that, inflation came in very tame, and so there wasn't really any reason to be concerned. And as a result, MBS prices fell. And In addition, housing data came out last week, which it didn't
didn't
beat expectations. But I know you talked a little bit about existing home sales on TV.
Yeah.
They matched expectations, and they were down a little bit from August, but nice improvement over the prior year.
Yeah, it's interesting to see where they did come in at, and what the prices are up. The volume, sales volumes are down. So I did a Fox broadcast while I was up here in Chicago. I was in the midst of speaking at the state directors' conference, state MBA directors, all the directors across the nation came together. Speaking, took a break from that, ran over to the Fox studio and did on that. Thanks for your comment on that.
Yeah.
So what else is significant about last week? I mean, there was quite a bit with Friday's news, but what do we have to look forward to this week?
Well, this week is mostly going to be the Fed meeting that comes out. It starts tomorrow, and the announcements will be made at 12:30 Wednesday, 12:30 Eastern time. And then this is one of the meetings that has a press conference to follow. Although, really, there's not much that anyone expects to come out of this meeting. They couldn't do much more than what they did last time, and unlikely that they'll make much of a change in anything that's been said so far. So, always important, but this meeting not near so as the last meeting. And then the economic news that's going to come out next week includes durable orders on Thursday. We also have the first look at the third quarter GDP on Friday, which will be a big event. 1.9% expected, only 1.3 last month, so we're expecting a little movement to the upside. Retail sales coming out this last week so much better than what was expected, I think helped people believe that this economic growth may be better than what had been built into the thought before retail sales came out. Housing data next this week, Wednesday's new home sales
and pending
home sales on Thursday. And then we have three auctions, the 2, the 5, and the 7 starting tomorrow. Nothing really on the calendar in Europe, so it may just be maybe a quiet week, depending on how certainly what the Fed says, and then how GDP and durable orders comes out.
Well, we'll be watching for that, Joe. And then for those of you that are listening to the broadcast, if you had the MBS Quote Line service, you would be up on it as it happens. Some of the most concise. Again, I keep saying this all the time, some of the most concise data that comes out, and it comes out timely, and you can read it while you're in the middle of a meeting because it's quick, to the point, good stuff. Stay tuned. We'll teach you some more, tell you more about how you can get connected to MBS Quote Line. Joe Farr, thanks so much for bringing in the report. Appreciate
it.
Good
Thank
to have you.
You
with us again. All right. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quote Line delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quote Line, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quote Line today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us. We sure wish Joe was up here, but we do have Andy, the Prophet Doctor, and of course Alice Alvey, and I've got to spend some time with her. We spoke yesterday to gather at the Tony Garitano Engage event. That was a lot of fun. Always fun to be with Alice on the platform. So much to say and so little time to say it. But Alice, good to have you on the broadcast. I'd like to have you share with our listeners, before we get into the update on what's going on, kind of what you're sensing here at the conference. Kind of give them a person on the street report of here at the conference.
Well, Dave, I think there's definitely a couple of different groups. There's always the groups who are in that secondary market investor mode. But even at that level, we're hearing lots of conversations of how do I defend myself against the CFPB.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what are they really going to look at with fair lending and ethics? And so I've spent a lot of my time, you know, with folks trying to help them find solutions for that, to not be afraid, right? I mean, there's definitely a fear about where the regulations are or the interpretation of the regulations are going.
Well, that is a big question, because I spoke at the state conference, the state directors conference, and that we listened to CFPB. Peggy spoke, the same individual that spoke. Peggy, is her last name is Atcher, I believe, and Atcher is, I believe, how you pronounce it. But Peggy spoke in your group, and they're putting a pretty good spin on it, saying, well, we're being reasonable, we're trying to get out there, and everyone, after all, we need to be monitored. These lenders needed to be monitored. But it was really quite interesting how she was trying to spin it. Thought I was watching one of the newscasts. You got to go into becoming a spin doctor the way she was doing it. It was really good. But the reality is, there's some pretty alarming data points out there, as you've talked about, the PHH lawsuit that's pending. So there is definitely probably the number one topic that I'm hearing as I walk around and go in and out of my meetings, and no one better to help them through it than Alice Alvey. I think I've given your name out about a dozen times already. So what do you have? What are you monitoring now? Should we be looking at as it relates to the regulatory world? I know they're out of session, so we don't have a new bill, but you tracking anything for us?
Yeah, just there's really one major proposed rule with still the comment period open, and I definitely want to make sure we save enough time for our special guest today. So we do have the proposed rule for the combined disclosures for the RESPA and Truth in Lending changes that will combine the good faith estimate and the HUD-1, which I still can't use the idea that we won't be calling it a HUD-1 anymore.
HUD-1, I know.
We're going to have to call it a closing disclosure and then a loan estimate. But that comment period is still open. The loan officer comp proposed rule period is closed. That closed last week, so hopefully you got your comments in on that major topic. But for the major things I really need you to get out there and comment on are about the tolerances. So they are looking to potentially change that we have a 10% tolerance to work with in the other settlement charges, and that any change at all, any increase, would have to be as a result of a true change in circumstance. Now we have a little bit of room, which certainly makes things a little bit easier as you're coming up to closing. And I think, so, you know, to the point of trying to impress upon CFPB how there is harm to consumers in eliminating the 10% is that, well, you're going to tell us we have to have kills to the customer at least 3 days ahead of time. I can't risk that, you know, I'm having to trigger more waiting periods over a simple $100 change, and that I have to turn around and reissue disclosures again. So, you know, because companies tend to err on the conservative procedurally,
right.
We have to try and do things always, and trying to do things sometimes hard. So I think impressing upon them how you may think in the law this is easy to implement, but we're trying to get 100 people to do the same thing, you know, it causes challenges and delays in closings. So that's definitely one we've got to say, nope, we need to keep our 10% tolerance. The other one is who provides the disclosure. You know, every audience I've talked to that says, hey, can you get that final HUD-1 out 3 days ahead of closing? I mean, usually everybody starts laughing because whose fault is that if we don't, right? You know, it does seem, because it'll be a combined disclosure and the till has to be out at least 3 days ahead of time, that there's going to be a discussion. Who is responsible? Is the title company or title agent going to send it out, or are we as lenders going to be responsible for that? Make sure, you know, I think there's a part of it that says it's much better if it's in our control, and that way we can make sure we're in compliance versus trying to hold another third party responsible for our liability of staying in compliance. So get your comments out there. Take a look at the forms. There are definitely some benefits to the forms. It is truly, I think, it's better information going to the consumer. It's hard to argue with that. So take a look at some of the procedural issues attached with it. And that's my report for today. You have till November 6th, folks. So do it
November
while you're at the conference.
All right. There you have it. Well, Al, so good to have you be with us on the radio. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule here at the conference to share with our listeners an update. It's so important. I had a chance to meet with Ted Tozier today and Carol Gallant of FHA. So we've had some really good meetings, a lot more data coming out, and there's a lot of changes. I mean, good changes going on at Ginnie Mae that will be announced. So lots of announcements. We can't wait. You have to tune in next week. We're going to have a lot more to talk about and what we're going to be able to share with you that came out of the conference. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us again. We're broadcasting live from Chicago, Illinois, from the Mortgage Bankers Association Conference. Great conference, probably one of the best attended, David Stevens said. I saw him just a few minutes ago, crossed in each other in the hall, and we were visiting briefly. And one of the best attended conferences in years, so that's very encouraging. A lot of optimism that it's that mixed thing. It's like the tale of two cities. You know, the best of times, the worst of times, the worst of times. When you look at it from a regulatory standpoint, look at the volumes of what's going on and profitability, some of the best times. And there's no one better to give us a perspective on profitability than the prophet doctor himself, Andy Schell. Good to have you on the podcast.
Okay.
I know you had to pull away from some meetings to get here, and I want to say thank you, Andy, for doing that. Give us an update on your perspective of what you're sensing here at the conference, Andy.
Well, thanks, Dave. Hopefully you can hear me again. As they said, we're in various hotel rooms around Chicago, so I may be too high up for the cell towers to work. But I had an interesting opportunity yesterday, Sunday afternoon. I was one of the judges to evaluate the future leaders.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yes, I and Marina Walsh and several other folks were on the, four of us were on the panel. And, by the end of the session, when it came to my turn to ask questions, they all were like, oh my gosh, what are you going to say now? Because, you know, for me, it's really about what I always talk about, ROI. It's ROE.
Alice, we've never heard that before, have we?
So, you know, I always like to understand what kind of returns we're going to get, because people like to talk about we're going to have lots of volume, we're going to have all kinds of efficiencies. Well, okay, and by having more volume and by having more efficiency, what does that do to your bottom line? And so it was good to work with the group and to ask questions and to see their perspective. And one of the things that I noticed from the future leaders' presentations is they were all looking at extensive growth opportunities, whether if it was new products, different products, portfolio products, as a marketing opportunity. Everybody had different growth strategies, and several of them, most of them, were very, very well laid out. So it's just a reflection on that the industry has maybe been down, and it's coming back. It's certainly not out. The challenges with the CFPB are what they are, but, you know, think about this. I spent the 90s with Bank of America in California, the legacy Bank of America, not the new one that's here today. It's really Wells Fargo. It's really NCMB or Nations Bank. And the old B of A, we were doing multi-billion a month, and we were doing it at a time when there was extensive regulation because we were regulated by the OTS and the OCC and the FDIC. And I had to do the examination interface for the banks for all the mortgage activity. And we did fine. We followed the rules that we're supposed to do. Now, granted, with some of the CFPB, some of the rules are changing and different. But dealing with a federal examiner is something that commercial banks have been doing forever. My entire career, we've been dealing with federal examiners, state examiners, FDIC examiners, you name them, they come in. And so while we're all worried about this, I just want to point back to at B of A, we had an amazing run in mortgage banking until it was acquired by Nations Bank and things were changed. But it is an opportunity still to take advantage of mortgage banking growth, despite the CFPB coming in, despite the new rules. Bankers have been dealing with this for a long time. As I say every show, and it becomes probably too repetitious, and people are getting sick of me saying this, but let's focus on the P's and Q's. Let's focus on blocking and tackling. Let's do the basics and be mindful of the fact that we have these regulatory environment that we're entering into, and everybody that we know around the country has bigger margins now than they have in a long time.
Right.
So what are you going to do with those bigger margins? You can't put it all in your pocket. You got to invest back in your company, and you're probably going to all have to hire a compliance officer. You're also going to probably have to hire somebody in your staff who has a degree in accounting, if not a CPA. You're going to have to bolster your accounting function. You're going to have to bolster your compliance function. But we've got bigger margins to do it. So instead of putting it all in your pocket, build for the future by enhancing your staff, raising the level of your staff a bit so that people really understand these details, and then we're going to be fine.
And we will. And you know what? That's so interesting, Andy, that you put it that way, because that's exactly what Peggy said. Peggy was actually a very good speaker for the Peggy Atcher from CFPB, very good speaker. And she says, you know, all we're asking you to do is what is in, you know, what the law is. Now, the challenge forever, a lot of people raise the question, it's changing so fast, and it's not always well written. So that, to your point, you got to have people on board. Like Alice and you in there helping people through these things, interpret it quickly, because if a new law comes out and it gets passed and you're not familiar with it, that is not a defensible position. Ignorance is not a defensible position, as we say.
Okay. So that's why you have a compliance person and you have a good accounting person. And not a bookkeeper, I'm talking a degree in accountant, maybe even a CPA. Got to step it up a bit, got to raise the bar a bit. The bar is getting raised around us, and we got a client to get there. And once we're there, we're going to be very successful for years to come.
Yep, that's so true. It sounds almost like what I was talking about with Michael Drain this morning at Jennie Mae. They're just saying we got to raise the bar is being raised for all of us across the board, across the industry. And so, very good. So, Prophet Doctor, thanks so much taking time out of your busy schedule to come in here and join us. Folks, we'll be right back with Robert England talking about the mortgage brokers down, but they're not out. You're going to want to stay tuned for this. Great information. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back with us. We have a special guest, Robert England, senior writer for the Mortgage Banking Magazine. He just published this month in the Mortgage Banking Magazine an article about brokers, and it's down. It's entitled "Down But Not Out." And it's a very intriguing article. He's one of the better writers. I enjoy reading everything that Robert writes. He's got a book out, and I want him to tell you all about that. Normally, we're all remote. We're operating out of laptops and portable equipment, so we don't have all the normal things that I would love to have up and bring you up to speed and all that. But, Robert, it's good to have you on the broadcast again. It's been hasn't been that long since you're here, but we're just always thrilled anytime we can get you back talking about one of the important articles in the industry. Robert, good to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here, and I wish I was in Chicago.
Well, it's pouring down rain. I saw some lightning flash when we're doing everything with computers and wireless as we do now. That gets you a little bit nervous when you're doing a live broadcast. Tell us a little bit about your book before, because we're going to get into this. There's so much to talk about, but I believe it's Black Box Casino. What was the name of your book? Give a brief synopsis about that, and then we'll tell everybody at the end of the program how they can get a copy of it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. It's Black Box Casino: How Wall Street's Risky Shadow Banking Crashed Global Finance. The book goes back and traces the causes of the crisis, which is divided into the underlying causes, which are those where pushing down lending standards over a period of 20 years, and it also gets into the immediate causes, which had to do with all of the investment banks loaded up with bad securities, heavily reliant on overnight lending, and subject to runs by people shorting their stocks.
Right.
And then
yeah.
The decisions that were made in Washington trying to deal with that. So I look into all of that and come to some conclusions about each and every part.
Well, the good news is our listeners are students of their industry. Otherwise, they wouldn't be listening to the broadcast. If they're just interested in the short-term gains of making a buck on originating loans and getting on, then they're most likely not the ones listening. The ones that are students of our industry are the ones that tune in and be a part of the broadcast each and week. And listeners, I've been saying for some time, we talk about how important it is we become students of this industry. This is a must-read book. It's excellent. You need to get it. And so let's give that information right now. How can they download or buy this book? Where is the best place for them to do so?
Well, the best place is online, and of course, as always, Amazon.com, but it's also on BarnesandNoble.com. You can buy it from the book publisher, which is ABC Clio or Prager Books, and it's on dozens and dozens of websites for sale. So just Google Black Box Casino, and there you'll see
a
place to buy it.
Go get that book. It's right up there with one of my other favorite books I recommend. That is Reckless Endangerment and All the Devils Are Here, another book on Wall Street. I mean, just really comprehensive, good study. And the reason I think that you have the favor that you do with Janet Hewitt at the Mortgage Banking Magazine is the way your analysis, it's fair. You really get into it. You focus. You have a knack, Robert, focusing in on the core issues. And I want to get right into it because we got many originators out there that are interested in this topic. So I want to ask you, as we start getting in, then we're going to pass the microphone around to Andy and Alice and Joe. But let's start into this. Why do you believe so many people that believe the mortgage broker was an endangered species? And how did that perception develop?
Well, I think it began with when people began to conclude, and a common conclusion was that mortgage brokers were the cause of the crisis, that the mortgage brokers were the ones who originated all the bad loans. And the mortgage brokers, you know, were not there to defend themselves in a way. They didn't have a presence in Washington
right.
when all of these conversations were going on. And so I think a lot of the regulation that came about in Washington that has been so onerous for mortgage brokers came about from that perception. And then there was another liability, which has to do with the fact that when a mortgage broker originates a loan, it's as is, even though it's underwritten by the bank or the correspondent or whoever they're selling it to. Mortgage brokers are not underwriting loans, so they're just originating them. And but when they sell them, it's as is. There's no recourse, and because of all the litigation that has come about in the wake of the housing bust. Very few of the big banks want to have anything to do with directly to deal with mortgage brokers because they can't make them buy back the loans.
And which goes into the next question is, what is the impact of Wells Fargo's decision to no longer directly accept loans from mortgage brokers? I mean, this seems like a logical outtake from your analysis here, but, you know.
Well, a lot of people saw that as a death knell for the industry. But, in fact, it is not. I don't believe it is. And as some of the mortgage brokers have pointed out to me, they're still selling loans to Wells Fargo, but they're selling them to an intermediary, a correspondent, and then they go to Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
The ranks of the mortgage brokers, you know, are actually increasing slightly. So it's not been the end of mortgage
growth. It hasn't been. I don't think it is. I'm going to toss the mic to Alice here and let her get in some of the questions. Alice, do we have you still there with us?
Yes, I am. Hey, hi, Robert. How do you think the cost of compliance with Dodd-Frank affected the mortgage broker industry?
Well, the mortgage brokers have, looked closely at this, and they come up with some actual figures. And one of them I talked with out in California, American Family Funding, said that in order for him to stay in business as a mortgage broker, he would have to hire a full-time compliance officer and a full-time human resources person. And so the compliance officer is going to cost him $5,000 to $6,000 a month, and the human resource person is going to cost him $4,000 to $5,000 a month. And the guy is Fred Arnold at American Family Funding, and he said just these two expenses alone would make it difficult to be open for business. So this burden has been falling on mortgage brokers all over the country for years now, and at this point, many of them have gone out of business, and a lot of them have gone back to banks to work as loan officers, and some of them have been acquired by other companies. So that's and it's because of the compliance cost.
So you've really seen that they've taken on having a compliance officer and not just relied on their correspondent investor for that?
Well, some of them have been acquired by correspondents, and so that they spread the cost of compliance across many mortgage brokers. But to be an independent mortgage banker, you would have to fund your own compliance cost.
Right.
Joe, let me get the mic over to you.
Yeah, thanks. And I want to go back to what you mentioned about Wells Fargo and brokers kind of getting a bad rap. Because you said something earlier on the pre-call that I didn't understand. And you'll recall that when Wells decided to get out of the business, just about coincided with their announcement that they were settling a lawsuit that was associated with, as I read, bad loans originated through through brokers. And can you elaborate on that? Because you surprised me with what you told me.
Sure. I actually talked to one of the brokers who talked with Wells Fargo after they made their decision. When Wells made their decision, they said, we're doing this to control our commitment, how our commitment is met on every mortgage that Wells Fargo makes, which is kind of a vague way of putting it. But I think what they were driving at was they didn't want to be acquiring loans that were they couldn't force the buyer to buy back. And according to one of the brokers I talked to, he talked to Wells afterward, and Wells confided to them that was in fact why they weren't continuing to buy direct. They were getting more and more pressure from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to buy back loans, and they didn't want to have to be buying them back. However, the decision was made at the same time that Wells had this settlement with the Department of Justice over alleged discrimination in loans that they had made in prior years. And it was stated at the time that all of these loans came from brokers, but the broker I talked with said that, in fact, the broker loans at Wells that were involved in that lawsuit actually came from a Wells subdivision, subprime subdivision, and that subdivision was treated as a broker. And so they felt that was an unfair connection to make in that settlement. And, of course, they're all prepared to live with what Wells Fargo has decided. But, the public image, the black eye, they thought was undeserved.
Right. And Robert, what was so shocking to me when I first read that was how on earth could a wholesale lender be responsible for a broker's lending practices when you didn't see all their loans? And what you're telling me now is that if this was a subsidiary or a division of Wells Fargo, then sure, Wells Fargo needs to be responsible for their lending practices.
Yes, indeed. And, most of these loans occurred in one location in Baltimore. As I said, and they weren't spread around the country from independent mortgage brokers. And in fact, this was a discrimination lawsuit, and discrimination was not proved by any intent or any measure, you know, any conventional measure of discrimination, but was done based on the fact that fewer people from certain groups were able to get mortgages where there was no proof of discrimination whatsoever, and they were using a new theory of disparate impact to reach a conclusion. So it was kind of unfair to Wells Fargo in the first place.
Right, but it sure clears up how people should not be too concerned about taking on responsibilities for conduct or practices that you don't have direct control over.
Right, exactly.
Andy Schell, let's get you into the discussion here.
All right, thanks, Dave. Well, hey, it's great to have you on the program. Robert, one of the things you mentioned earlier that I just wanted to zero in on a little bit more is that the premise is brokers are down but not out. And you commented with Alice a minute ago that you referenced a brokerage operation who obviously takes applications, forward those applications to correspondents who then sell the loans onto the investors. Typically, brokers don't sell things. And you mentioned about that the broker was going to have a compliance officer, which would be cost prohibitive for them. So I'm trying to reconcile in my mind how if brokers have to have compliance officers and that cost is cost prohibitive, how does that then open up the opportunity for a resurgence in brokers when it's too expensive to be a broker? I was confused by that point.
Well, a lot of them have been acquired by a correspondent, and they've continued to have their business as a unit within a larger company, and they've been able to spread that across the cost across a larger base. That's what's happened in the case of American Funding, which was acquired by American Pacific in California, and American Pacific then had the cost of compliance for that, and maybe I think 16 or more other offices. And so that cut down the cost of compliance for them. And
So in that case, just so I'm clear, what really that means is that broker is now a branch.
Yes, they're a branch. Other brokers, you know, they have managed to deal with the costs, I guess, based on the volume that they had, amount of business. So I guess there's a cutoff point where the cost of compliance is bearable if you have a certain level of business, and if it falls below that, it's suddenly not profitable to be in business because you have this large fixed cost.
I see, exactly. Well, where do you see brokers fitting into the mortgage industry now and going forward?
Well, a lot of them are, you see that the correspondents who are not the big companies, but you see a remaking of the mortgage industry, or a reshaping, I guess, of the mortgage industry that's going on in response to these litigation concerns and the regulation. And the correspondents, some are expanding their networks and taking on the mortgage brokers who were shut out of the process by the big banks. And even some of these refi waves have increase the demand for mortgage brokers, and the so they've been, you know, willing to get into the business even and start originating loans for these correspondents. Some of the correspondents, a correspondent in Texas that started out a few years ago as a retail operation, switched entirely to brokers, and they started signing them on as brokers began to be cut off from the big banks. And of course, these correspondents themselves have evolved into mortgage bankers because they've decided they would not just close loans and sell them, but they would also retain the servicing. And the one in bank 360, the company in Texas, which is called 360 Mortgage, sells all of their loans to Fannie Mae. In fact, so they don't even sell them to another bank, and they've been able to grow quite a bit and expand their mortgage broker network with that business model.
I'd like to get into kind of getting my head wrapped around how many brokers there are out there and how difficult it is to know. I mean, what was the number at the peak, and what is it estimated to be the number of mortgage brokers nationwide today?
All right, that's a good question, and it's hard to know with precision because there are different ways of counting them, because mortgage brokers often have some correspondent business and some brokerage business involved,
right.
A mixture. But the Wholesale Access also is a company that used to track mortgage brokers in detail, and they have some good figures, historic figures. There were 12,000 mortgage brokers in 1990, and that rose to 53,000 in 2006.
Huh?
And that was the last year that Wholesale Access measured the brokers. There is now the new National Mortgage Licensing System, and that reports that there are 14,000 mortgage brokers as of early 2012. So
now these are firms that are just registered purely as mortgage brokers. Is that correct?
They're listed as being in the business of first loan brokering, quote unquote.
Okay.
By this
National Mortgage Licensing System. Yeah.
At the same time, there are 388,000 loan officers at depository institutions.
Wow.
And retail, by the way, is now 62% of originations. So the share of the mortgage brokers is way down also.
Yeah, the market share has dramatically shifted on that. So, and I think it's an important distinction. There are still companies, even banks, those that have the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mae approvals and Ginnie Mae approvals, that are still choosing to broker a segment of their population. So they're not in these numbers, most likely. Am I correct?
No.
Yeah, that would make sense. So they're not in the number. So pure mortgage brokers is around 14,000. That is a substantial reduction. But your article, the premise of your article, is they're down, but they're not out. Let's go to there's a whole bunch of more questions I want to get into, but there's no question these numbers show that they're down. Why is it that your study drew the conclusion they're definitely not out?
Well, because there are people who are involved with new business models, as I was describing, is one of them, and they are actually seeking out mortgage brokers, and the number of mortgage brokers is rising as a result.
Yeah.
A process seems to have begun in which more of the mortgage market may ultimately move outside of regulated financial institutions, and the rise of more independent mortgage bankers is a way to escape this onerous regulation that's putting a hammer on the business right now. And those institutions can sell their loans directly to Fannie and Freddie without going through the depository institutions, which have a number of restrictions on them. And I think that's part of the optimism that's out
yeah.
there. And some of the people I talked to were extremely optimistic. One of them was John Robbins at
John Robbins, yeah, the previous president of the MBA. Yeah.
Yes. He has a company, Bexell American Mortgage in San Diego, and he is very bullish on the future of mortgage banking and mortgage brokers. And he has started that company up and is signing up mortgage brokers also, along the lines of the way the 360 Mortgage did
right.
in Texas. And he's also working on a new program called a mini correspondent program that he's going to seek approval, he's seeking approval from the CFPB. And under this program, the brokers, they will extend a line of credit for brokers to originate and close and then sell the mortgage so they are actually liable for it.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see what John's doing. He's one of these four. He thinks forward and where the market's heading. Folks, we have as our special guest again Robert England, who wrote the article about brokers. They're down, but they're not out. It's encouraging to hear these reports. We'll be right back after this brief break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Well, we're actually broadcasting from beautiful, rainy Chicago here at the MBA conference, normally down in Austin. Good to have you with us again. We got a special guest, Robert England, talking about brokers down but not out. Alice, I want to toss the mic into your direction, and especially we start looking at Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and the impact of all that, and toss it back over to you for some of your thoughts and questions.
Well, I actually, as I was listening to Robert talk about the, it seems like the brokers, in your view, a lot of them are maybe getting their branch set up, getting an operation that becomes appealing to, you know, a correspondent or to become a branch. How are they, kind of off topic of where that next question is, Dave, how are they overcoming the reputational issues? You know, that as you mentioned earlier on, you know, that they kind of took the blame in a lot of respects. So is that something that they can, you know, that they're able to overcome? What are some of the things they're doing from a sales standpoint?
Well, I think that a lot of them would say that bad brokers out there, and a lot of them, they were washed out of the system. And so the very fact that they have survived is a testament to their good reputation. And they are originating all of these loans today, and they're working well with their correspondents, and their correspondents are pleased with the results they're getting. And that's one reason I think that that these new business strategies are emerging out there in the industry. So, and also today we have a licensing. We didn't have that before.
Right.
We have state licensing. You have to be licensed by a state or registered federally. And this licensing, you know, they have to pass a test, and their pass is examined. You can't have someone go into the business, you know, who has a sketchy past. And so people are more confident about brokers because of the licensing, I think.
Yeah, that's a great point. That is really a significant point. And Alice, I'll go back to you in just a minute. One of the things that I want to comment on is we have a friend of ours who is refinancing, and he says, Dave, do you have any references for a mortgage broker? And I go, we do. I got some people I can refer you to. But why is it I was pressing in on that, to Alice's point about the reputational risk? Is that a blow? He says, oh, no, I love working with brokers because they really do shop the market. And for years, the broker has been saying, you could go to one company that has these list programs, or we will take you to multiple companies, go to one source. We're kind of the place that'll go out there. And I think that is still resonating. So I think part of it, is it not, is there is a sense that there is a continuing demand for the mortgage broker, that there's a sense that they will get them the best deal, and rather than getting just going to one bank and being stuck with that bank's programs and rates. Your thoughts on that?
Well, that's always been the appeal of the broker. You know, the consumer does not really have the time and doesn't know where to go to get all the kinds of offers that a broker can offer them. And really, this huge regulatory burden on brokers is anti-consumer, because
right.
By decimating the ranks of the brokers, they've reduced consumer choice in the market, and they made it more difficult for consumers to find mortgages. And the other thing that mortgage brokers are doing is traditionally they've done, and they still do today, they can originate and close a mortgage for much less cost and in much faster than the banks. So the cost of origination today is very high, and that's also because of all these regulatory burdens. So while we have these low interest rates right now, and they won't be with us forever, if we don't do something about this cost of origination, it's going to, you know, it is, even today, it's adding a cost to the loan that wasn't there before, and that cost will be more perceptive over time as interest rates rise back up again. So
well,
that's another anti-consumer impact.
Well, that may be a good segue back to Andy. Andy, Alice, I want to get more questions asked about CFPB. But Andy, what's your thoughts on that, the cost effectiveness, you, Mr. ROI?
Well, I have a number of thoughts about that. If we compare what a mortgage company needs to be in order to be compliant, the difference between that and a bank is going to become less significant, because although the bank has a broader depository regulatory compliant focus, there's still going to be some level of cost inefficiencies that we see even among large mortgage companies versus the mid-tier mortgage companies. And so I think we need to be careful in passing a broad brush and saying these people are always more expensive than those, because that's not always the case. We've got a number of community banks that we work with who are operating very efficiently, and we've got some mortgage companies that we work with that are very, very large who would argue that they're even less efficient. So I think it's important to get a detailed assessment of what the actual costs are and then make conclusions from that.
Well, I would agree, you know, that you can't say always. If I said that I misspoke. But in general, because the brokers have, you know, they're more nimble, they're faster, they have to fight for the business, they earn their living on a basis of a commission. They're just generally more efficient than loan officers. And today, most loans are being originated by loan officers at banks, and the time it takes 60 days or more to close on a mortgage. So the fact that that's actually become a profit center, originations are actually make money today, when in the past they didn't make money.
Back in the old days.
So they're charging so much for it. So that's a sign, really, of that the origination process is inefficient.
Alice, let's go back to you talking about the whole cost and how it's impacting brokers. It is impacting brokers in the LO compensation. Alice, back to you with some LO comp questions.
Yeah, so Robert, how are the brokers, you think, responding to the changes to loan officer compensation? Is this going to, the proposed rule change that we have, are they positive about that? And, from what you've heard?
Yes. The Federal Reserve had the loan officer, or the loan origination rule, that had a negative impact on the mortgage brokers. Especially those who relied on borrower pay arrangements to earn their compensation. And under the Federal Reserve rule originally in 2011, a mortgage brokerage firm could not pay their loan officers or originators anything but an hourly wage or a wage to originate loans if it were borrower pay. They could still give them a commission if it were lender pay. And the Federal Reserve viewed the mortgage broker as both an originator and the lender at the same time. And they, for some reason, they thought that was double compensation. But the CFPB, when they reviewed this rule, changed that. And so they ditched the flat fee, basically, and this new rule. And so this will be a positive for the mortgage brokers. The ones who are in the business now are primarily lender pay mortgage brokers. So this will allow more options for mortgage brokers.
Joe, let's get back to you. And you represent so many, you have so many brokers out there using your service, so many originators. Love to make sure you can anticipate questions that they're thinking as they're listening to our broadcast. Let's go back to you.
Well, just a quick comment was that I have heard on a number of occasions where individuals that were brokers needed to go work somewhere else for a period of time through the issues we've been going through, and they're they're anxious and very happy to now get back out and become brokers again. I think there'll be a move back from that 50,000 going to 14. I think is going to show some growth. But one of the things brokers talk about all the time are not having the same rules, and compensation was one of them. I'm sure there are other things, and I don't know if this is a fair characterization, but one of the guys at CFPB, Raj, how do you say his last name?
Oh yeah.
Seems to be out to get them, the broker. Is that a fair characterization? And are things going to become more or less level in how they're able to do business?
Well, we don't know. I mean, I did talk to someone from the CFPB when I wrote this article, Pete Carroll, who is over the mortgage side of this, of the CFPB's operations. And, of course, they have this whole process, which is required under law, where they have to gather together small businesses and look into the impact of what their rules are on those businesses and adjust them accordingly. And, they did make this one change that is favorable, but they didn't seem to do it, as I understand what Pete Carroll had to say. They weren't so much motivated by the fact that this would be beneficial to mortgage brokers and increase the number of brokers out there and thus help improve and make the industry more efficient. They saw a benefit in the fact that these fees cross-subsidize small loan balance originations. And so for their own reasons, that's why I mentioned that, because it's encouraging on one hand, but on the other hand, it seems to fit into an ideological need that operates at the Bureau. Certainly, with all the rules that have come down from Washington, there seems to be almost a clueless view of the mortgage broker industry and this common view that they caused the crisis. And so I think that's unfortunate, and I hope that it can be tempered, because all the hopes for a rebound in mortgage brokers is predicated on the regulators being somewhat sensible and aware of how the market works and devising rules that do not interfere with an efficient market.
No question that the market is going to be surging. I'm encouraged by what I read in your article, the fact that it is a glass half full analysis of the mortgage brokerage. But I think there's a number of factors. 2 years ago, I spoke in Atlanta at the National MBA Conference when this whole thing was contracting at a ridiculous rate. And I said, we're going to come to a point, and we look forward, that we're going to have a capacity crisis, and we're going to embrace again anybody who can be efficient and effective at aggregating loans, bringing loans in, originating loans. And I saw it back then. It's so good to see that we're starting to see the numbers come back into the marketplace. I think the cost factor, I mean, there is going to be greater costs. There is greater risk as a broker. And some people say, if I got to go through all this risk, why not just go be a banker? Well, there's net worth requirements. Those are going up. So I think we're just seeing the bar raised across the board, whether you're a mortgage broker, loan originator, whatever it is, whatever part of the food chain, the mortgage food chain you're in, you're just going to see it continue to go up and up and up. And I think it is going to bring us to a place where mortgage brokers are going to be valued. It's going to look different. It's never going to go back to the way it was. And I just thank you so much, Robert, for taking the time to be on the broadcast, for taking the time to do your research and write this article. And I think it's encouraging for anybody who has worked for a broker or values and sees that. And I think for those that have the wholesale channel, also, it's encouraging. And John Robbins, being one of the forerunners in his thinking, I mean, he sees the where things are go. I think he reads the markets very well. He's been successful in the past, and it's encouraging to see guys like that. What are your parting comments on this? We're just right now running out of time, and so what are the walkaways from this article that you would just like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I think the bottom line is that if the regulators are sensible in terms of imposing and regulating the mortgage brokerage industry, that it will come back, and it could come back to a sizable share of the market. Some think it could reach again 30% of originations.
Wow.
And that we need that. We have a shortage of originators. even now. So imagine a recovered market. We cannot have a full housing recovery without more originators.
That is interesting, because when I was going to my breakfast meeting this morning, I rode in a cab over there, and guess where it came to? The cab driver was asking about loan originators, how difficult it is for him to find someone because he's buying a house. And he says, how can I get a hold of them? The banks, I have to wait forever to get an appointment with these guys. I would miss my mortgage broker. So I thought that was very, very effective. Robert, thank you so much for being a part of the broadcast, taking again. Keep up the good work and keep us informed on those articles you're writing. Again, our special guest has been Robert England. Also wrote Black Box Casino. We talked about it earlier in the program. But get the book. It's a must-listened or must-read book out there. I always like it when it's book on tape. I have time to listen to it in the car. But I thank you so much for taking the time to be a part of it, Robert. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. We'll have you back again. As soon as you get one of those articles out there, we'll get you back and talking about it. Folks, next week we're going to have Kevin Cuff, who is Executive Director of the Community Mortgage Lenders Association, Lenders of America. I had lunch with him the other day. He's also running for Congress. He's going to be one of the representatives. And his story is interesting because I'm excited to see him, what he's doing to step in and be a part of the solution. Getting involved in government, rolling up his sleeves. Going to be a great broadcast. Stay tuned. We're going to be back next. So stay tuned. This is the end of the broadcast. Tune in. We'll be back with you next week. Have a great week, everybody. Appreciate you.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.